First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Will Duval ever be safer together? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, what will be the fate of an ongoing police reform coalition in the city? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a little good news for your midweek. It's our What's Good Wednesdays. But first, this hour, the fate of police reform in Jacksonville is up in the air today. This after Jacksonville City Council member Michael Boylan stepped down earlier this week from a committee called Safer Together. Now, his resignation leaves the effort in limbo. It was initially formed to improve relations between police and the community at large. Boylan's departure leaves only City Council member Joyce Morgan on the committee that has been meeting since December of 2020. Safer Together had actually issued a report with a number of recommendations for police reform in Jacksonville. A final decision on Safer Together, whether it lives or dies, could come later today. Meanwhile, a coalition of groups are speaking out about the matter, and they're urging the president of the Jacksonville City Council, Sam Newby, to keep the work going. Right now, we welcome Michael Sampson, Executive Director of Jacksonville Community Action, Inc. He's on the line. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on.
Already getting lots of calls. What are your thoughts about how to do police reform in Jacksonville? 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Now, Michael, you, along with a number of other groups, have sent a letter to the president of the Jacksonville City Council urging him, imploring him, in your words, to keep the work of the Safer Together committee going and to appoint a new co-chair. You're concerned there will be no meaningful reform. Tell us more about your position.
Thank you, Melissa. Well, with the news of Councilman Boylan stepping back was definitely shocking to a lot of folks who had, throughout the process, felt that he was taking an active part in listening to the concerns of folks from the crowd and also the different stakeholders who went to those meetings, including, you know, Dr. Hodo, Dr. Van Buren, who took part in the Safer Together study. So his kind of stepping back was definitely a shock. And then to hear that Council President Sam Newby was considering even, you know, closing the work team, the Safer Together crew, you know, that was very shocking to a lot of us. So a lot of organizations, you know, who were, you know, very active, let's say even last year in regards to, you know, the huge mobilization you saw in Jacksonville, very record and historic, you know, those organizations, we all came together and wanted to implore the council president to really take a stand with these organizations and keep this committee going. You know, it was created last year by the late great mayor and council president Tom Missouri, and we feel as though the work of this group should still be going. We have a lot of issues in Jacksonville, especially when it comes to JSO and policing, and I think the Safer Together, I think what it did was it created a forum for community members, even like myself, to learn about the practices of the sheriff's office, to have a space to put forth concerns and address issues. You know, without such a space, you have, you know, protests, you have these different mobilizations that keep, you know, that will keep happening. But, you know, I think it led a lot of legitimacy to the process to have a city council really take a look at, you know, reform. And you know, not sure why the councilman dropped off. I know he mentioned last week he had a meeting with the sheriff. And, of course, one of the big concerns that me and other folks had was that the sheriff, you know, didn't participate in any meeting that occurred with the Safer Together. And, you know, that kind of, to us, shows, you know, a lack of care of the process, you know, like to send the director is one thing, but it seems like when the questions got more tense, there was a series of questions last Friday at last Friday's meetings around diversity within the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office and reporting those numbers. And it just, you know, to the random community member who goes to these meetings, it felt like there was a lot of pressure from certain powers in the city, you know, especially the sheriff maybe, or those part of JSO who don't really want reform. It seems like there's a lot of pressure put on Councilman Borland and others, really, to make sure that the work of this doesn't get done. And even if you look at Councilman Borland's kind of resignation letter, he cites he's always been against the Civilian Incident Review Board.
Yeah, you know, if I might jump in there, that was one of the recommendations, a review board for people to review incidents where police shoot civilians in particular. That, of course, is the controversy everywhere, not just Jacksonville. A few other stakeholders to this whole matter are calling into the show, Michael. We'll take them one by one. The number to join us, 549-2937. Let's begin with Bobby O'Connor, who is known around the community for conducting workshops on race relations. Bobby, you've been part of this ongoing conversation with Safer Together. What do you think needs to happen now?
I think definitely that President Newby needs to continue this workshop effort. I think we are just, beginning to scratch the surface. I'm sorely disappointed in Michael Borland stepping back from this. I think it's one of the privileges that we have to step out of the fray when it gets hard. And I really...
By that you mean as a white person? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yes, it's part of our white privilege that step back when the going gets tough. And African Americans who don't feel safe in this community don't have that option. And I think it's our responsibility as white people to step up to the plate and stay there until the work is done.
Here is a quote from Councilmember Boylan in his letter to the president of the City Council, Sam Newby. He says, quote, "While I understand their passion, I cannot be party to an effort where individuals use the forum to make disparaging assertions and unwarranted accusations toward fellow citizens who have chosen to protect and serve them." Bobby, your reaction to that?
As I said to Michael on the phone and also in an email I wrote to him, I really disagree with how he characterized the citizens' comments at the meeting. I was there. I've been to all of the Safer Together committees. I'm really sorry that he wasn't able to listen at a deep enough level to emphasize with the frustration and anger that was being expressed. And it's not just for decades, it's for centuries. And it's like people are sick and tired of how things are in this community and that we all don't feel safe.
We have yet to hear from Joyce Morgan, who is now the only member of the City Council leading this effort, and we don't know yet whether it will continue. Council President Sam Newby may make a decision today. In the meantime, Ben Frazier is also on the line from the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, another one of the groups involved in this whole effort. Ben, you are imploring this effort to continue as well?
Most definitely. There's much work that is yet to be done. We need to recognize that it is in the midst of the storm and the uncomfortable conversation occurs. Be able to address momentarily the issue of the resignation, which Mr. Borland says disparaging assertions and unwarranted accusations were made. We need to see a sense review board.
And Ben, not to cut you off, the connection's not so great. If you could maybe step, to a window or something so we can hear you a little better.
Okay.
That's a little better.
Maybe I should call back that way.
Why don't you do that? We'll get you right back on. But Michael Sampson, let's go back to you with Jacksonville Community Council, Inc. Some of these sessions have gotten very heated. There have been things said that could be hurtful to some. It's a reflection of how emotional and how intense this matter is for people. What about the council member's comment that he can't be part of a forum where disparaging assertions and unwarranted accusations are being made toward the police in particular, I believe is what he's saying.
Well, it's one of those situations in which, you know, when you allow community members to have a forum to express, you know, this is decades and years of lack of feeling as if, you know, we have a voice, especially as black residents of the city when it comes to policing in the city. So this is the first time of any kind you've had a city council forum created to really understand the concerns of the neighborhoods and folks who interact with JSO. So of course you're going to have passion. You're going to have, you know, you've had families who've lost, you know, their daughters to police brutality, police shootings. You know, they're going to be passionate and upset and want to, you know, give forth their issues. So I think that's pretty silly on the councilman's part to really, you know, it seems like a misdirect to blame the public for why public servants who are, you know, elected and paid to represent taxpayers, you know, can't take any heat. You know, I think, you know, like, you know, that's part of the job. You know, part of the job as a civil servant
and
to hear the concerns.
Let me ask you now that the heat now moves to Sam Nuby. You, along with the Northside Coalition, the NAACP, a group of students at UNF, Take 'Em Down Jacks, a number of groups are now putting the matter to Sam Nuby. Have you heard from him yet?
We have not heard back from him yet, but we're hoping that he definitely takes a stand. You know, at the start of his reign as city council president early in the summer, he kept these meetings going, which we were very happy with, and we're hoping that he can continue to do so. I mean, I know he suggested that some of these recommendations may be taken up by city council, but, you know, as we know with city council, we've had issues with putting forth issues that the community has to get addressed, you know, and we're hoping that this can continue. You know, Councilman Garrett Dennis introduced a civilian review board legislation that has last year that has not, you know, moved at all. So this conversation hasn't been happening. You know, there's been no avenue, even after you saw tens of thousands of Jacksonville residents. You know, you probably saw more people in protests who voted in even some local elections. The fact that out of that, you haven't seen any meaningful reform from city council is a black eye to city leadership. And this is a historic moment in this country. Sometimes it feels like the city has almost two mayors. You have the sheriff and you have Mayor Curry. And it seems like the sheriff is dictating policy of the city council. And we're of the opinion that the city council should be an independent body that serves the constituents and the citizens. Therefore, we feel as though something simple as a civilian review board that doesn't have any power over the sheriff's office, it's just an advisory board, the fact that this board is looked at, you know, by the sheriff's office, by the Fraternal Order of Police, as such a demonizing thing for officers, I think it speaks volumes, you know.
Just to get a couple of other voices on, Bobby O'Connor, there are some cities that have begun civilian review boards to review controversial incidents where extrajudicial killings occur, law enforcement most often on people of color. The lack of accountability for those deaths, of course, is what is driving this nationwide call for reform. What about the argument, though, Bobby, that in the cities where these boards have been set up, that they have not always been effective or had a positive impact on the process? That's the argument law enforcement is making. What's your response?
Well, we did present during the Safer Together workshops, a doctor came from San Diego and talked about the Citizens Review Board there, and she was quite learned and quite good in what she presented, but it was met with a brick wall from JSO saying that Citizen Review Board members, you know, were political and had a motive and came with emotional, you know, rhetoric. And as I said to Mr. Zona when he said that, sir, you also have an agenda and you also have emotion. So it's true, and we all do, but that doesn't mean we should not have someone looking at us from outside, and that it's like the fox guarding the hen house. And one other thing I think that's really important is that we're not talking about individual people here. We're not talking so much about Mike Williams or Detective or Director Bruno. We're talking about systemic issues within the JSO and within other police departments throughout this country. So to have your feelings hurt, we're talking about systems, and we said that over and over during our workshops.
Right. These are systemic issues, I think the data shows, not an indictment of any one person or any one official. Lots of tweets coming in. Hope tweets the show. It is another example of hypocrisy in city leadership and a lack of courage to do the real work of building a more just society. Boylan caved to pressure, and it's frustrating to see him step away right as the work becomes hard. For the record, he denies that. Mandy tweets the show, upon reading about Councilman Boylan's step back, the first thought that came to my mind is the privilege behind the action. He can't step away from it because it doesn't affect him in his daily life, she says. 549-2937. Jay on the West Side. Hi, Jay. Thanks for calling.
Hey, and thanks for taking the call. The issue is, I believe, when you're a public servant and you step down and you say, due to the criticism of citizens criticizing JSO, well, the thing is, JSO is not perfect. They need to step up and do their job. In black neighborhoods, we're over-policed, we get harassed, we get stereotyped, and then they wonder why there's so much hostility when people are at these meetings. It's because there are no resources, they're not offering any jobs. You over-police our neighborhoods, the police that live there, they don't reside in the neighborhoods to make relationships with the community. I mean, and then it's just a whole mess. It's just about accountability. Like, of course, nobody's perfect, but to step down in the middle of the midst of this and just leave and say you can't put up with it, that's unacceptable. I feel as if you're so used to exercising your privilege, and as you said earlier, as African Americans, we don't have that privilege in our neighborhoods to just say, oh, we're going to leave or we don't want to deal with it. And when we put our trust in the city and public servants and that's the response we get, what do you guys expect?
Thanks, Jay. Todd on the South Side. Hi, Todd. Go ahead, Todd.
Thank you for taking my call. It seems to me that historically, regarding police reform and making meaningful steps forward to deal with issues that affect primarily, as far as we're concerned, the African American community, it's always shut down. This is something that has happened over and over and over again. And I would like to ask somebody on the city council to pick up where Mr. Boylan left off, whether it be Matt Carlucci or someone else. But we have to keep this this thing going because the reform is absolutely necessary.
Thanks for that. And we have Ben Frazier back now, Northside Coalition of Jacks. Ben, it's my understanding that Council Member Carlucci, who we must disclose is also running for Jacksonville mayor, has indicated an interest in resuming, in picking up the mantle of this work. But of course, the president of the city council may decide to pull the plug. Go ahead.
Well, the bottom line here is that what we're looking for is courageous leadership, bold and courageous leadership. There's a need for this Citizens Review Board and for this committee to continue. I hope Matt Carlucci will pick up the baton in the relay race of history. I want to mention something about over-policing. Let's deal with some statistics. 33,000 people arrested last year. 55% were black. That's over-policing, folks. What about police-involved shootings last year? 60% were black men shot by white police officers. Here's another fact you probably don't know. Only 16% of the sworn number of police officers are black, and there are even far less black sergeants and lieutenants, under 7%. Those statistics are facts and empirical proof, not just unwarranted accusations as alleged by Mr. Boylan. We need this committee to continue. We need somebody who will step up to the plate.
Michael Sampson, could you please continue on within that vein and lay out to the listeners what the Safer Together Committee is recommending or advocating for when it comes to police and criminal justice reform in the city of Jacksonville?
So there was a report that was worked on by Dr. Hodo as well as Dr. Van Buren. In regards to the meetings last week, it came back with really two recommendations. One was for the city to revisit the idea of a civilian review board, and the second one was for the city to revisit the JSO budget in regards to some of the funds in that budget, perhaps diverting that towards mental health resources and responders so that, you know, essentially a lot of the sheriff's office, and they've said it themselves, you know, they're kind of given a few jobs, you know, a bunch of jobs. They have to be police officers. They have to be mental health counselors. They have to be all this. You know, part of the report from the State of the Together Committee was, is there a way to divert some resources that are given towards to the JSO towards them hiring mental health experts to deal with a lot of those calls that end up, you know, becoming, you know, police-involved shootings, like Aaliyah Baker, who was a woman who had a mental health episode and was killed by Officer J.C. Nobles. So those were two of the reports that came about. I know Councilman Borland, you know, like I said, from his resignation statement, he said that he was never for a civilian incident review board. And to those citizens who were, you know, at those meetings, it seems like he already had in his mind a position that, you know, no amount of community input would have changed. So in a lot of ways, you know, we're disappointed that he left, but we're kind of thankful too, because of, you know, in that capacity of chair, you have to have open ears. You have to be willing to listen to what, you know, the community wants. And it seems like he already had a position in his head that he wanted to convince others of. And when others weren't convinced of that, you know, he stepped back. So those recommendations, you know, we're imploring for the city council to do something with it, you know, create some legislation and get the ball rolling. We want this Safer Together committee to continue to happen, to explore the best way to apply those recommendations. However, we just, you know, we need the city leadership to really step up to the plate and make this happen.
Bobby O'Connor, we will know more potentially later today on this. If the committee is folded, where do you see this work going from here?
Oh my gosh, you know, Melissa, I don't really know. I cannot express how disappointed I would be that yet again we're going to do a study in this city and we're going to have a report and it's going to sit on the shelf and gather dust.
And it wouldn't be the first time, not even close to the first time.
That's what I'm saying. That is exactly what I'm saying. I've lived here since 1972, and there's just a lot of dust on studies looking at the issue of race. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I think this community is sick and tired, and they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, just like Fannie Lou Hamer said, and I don't know what's going to happen. And that's not any kind of a threat or anything, but it's just like we have to step up to the plate and do what's right, and we have to continue to look at ourselves. And JSO has to get out of their denial. And they only talk about how they're a premier organization during our group meetings, but they aren't willing to look at, okay, so we do things that are premier. We have some great things like PAL, but where do we need to shift and where do we
Police Athletic League. Yeah. Ben Frazier, you know, police union and fire union endorsements of local candidates and public officials carry a lot of weight in this community. That has certainly impacted reform over the years. Pressure from groups like yours has resulted in police in this city starting the use of body cameras, other changes. Pressure historically has worked. How will you and this coalition continue with this campaign?
We will, in fact, continue in our effort to speak truth to power, to remain active and vocal. We recognize, Melissa, that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will.
Thank you all, Michael Sampson, Ben Frazier, and Bobby O'Connor, for being with us. We'll continue to follow the story and continue to reach out to the officials involved. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Melissa.
All right. Much more still ahead later. A little good news for your midweek. But up next, why aren't more men going to college? How to recruit males to the campus? That's after this.
The Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT Public Media is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, profiles of local artists, and more. Turn your ear on the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida and learn more about the local artist whose music is reverberating across the country. Visit jacksmusic.org to play it local and play it loud.
WJCT Public Media is bringing you a new healthcare show, What's Health Got to Do with It? Our goal is to help you navigate all things health and healthcare and get you the answers you deserve. Join me, Dr. Joe Servin, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 9 p.m. on WJCT News 89.9. Sponsored in part by American Brain Foundation, Epilepsy Foundation, and Norellis.
Welcome back. Well, the nation's colleges and universities have a problem. Not enough men. This fall, women outnumber men on 2- and 4-year campuses in the millions. Nearly 60% of college students are now women. 40% are men. That's an education gap that's been widening for decades. Local schools have recognized this issue, and they're trying to address it. How to get more men to school? Well, for more, I spoke with Dr. Teresa McGregor, Vice President of Enrollment Management at Jacksonville University. Well, the statistics on who's attending college have gotten a lot of attention. Millions of men opting out of college. You know, it used to be that 60% of the student body was male, 40% female on most campuses. Now it's the reverse. Are you seeing that on the JU campus, too?
I would say the class on the JU campus is very similar to the national trends that we're seeing. Some private institutions have even reported higher numbers of disparity between their men and women, but we're pretty consistent at the undergraduate level with that statistic.
Yeah, like about 60% female to 40% male. The Department of Education doesn't have a lot of research into what's driving this, but from your perspective, what are you seeing and how is this affecting campus life?
Sure. I think like most social issues, it's very multifaceted, and we don't have research out there to really help us understand this. We just see these statistics. But I think one important measure to note is this has really been occurring over the last 40 years. It's certainly hit a tipping point now where we really truly reversed that statistic. But since the 1980s, women have actually been earning more bachelor's degrees than men. So what we're seeing is not only are there more women coming into college, but more women are also persisting and graduating. So after about 4 years, about 50% of women are graduating and only 40% of men who enter. So mm-hmm. I think that there's many, many factors contributing to this trend.
And there are real consequences to this trend. College graduates earn as much as 60% more than high school graduates. They tend to be healthier, happier. They tend to have better marriages. They tend to live longer. So figuring out why men are not enrolling in college should be a national priority. How do you see higher education looking at this issue, and why do you think it matters for Jacksonville University?
Well, I think it does certainly change the campus experience. When you change sort of the makeup of that class and who is there. You know, what makes a college experience so rich and robust is an exchange of ideas from people with multiple backgrounds. We have students from 49 states in 43 different countries, and you want those perspectives of males and females and all the diversity that's out there. It really helps us as a society and enriches that experience. You know, I think there's a real narrative out there that is devaluing higher education and really presenting it as a very transactional experience, something that is preparing people to go out and get a job. in, as you mentioned, you know, the college graduates make up to 60% more, which may be over $1 million over a lifetime more than non-college graduates. So while this idea of a career is important, really the college experience is so much more than that. And so much of the learning that happens goes on outside of the classroom. And there's large groups now of men who are missing out on those opportunities and those experiences to learn and to grow and to have these interactions. And that will have real impacts to our society as a whole. If you look now at the top 100, you know, Fortune 5 corporations, the 100 senators that we have, over 70% of those positions are currently held by men. And certainly over time, there will be less and less men prepared to go into these types of positions.
So how do schools like JU approach this in terms of trying to recruit more male students to sort of balance out the student population a little more?
Sure. It's certainly been a topic of discussion on our campus, as I'm sure it is on many, many campuses. You know, it affects the experience, as I mentioned, but also things like housing and how we handle that. So we really do have to look at this. And I think it's imperative that higher education really takes the lead on showing the value, why it's important to young men as they're growing up. And that is something that has to happen early and consistently through the educational career of all students. But in particular, we're going to need to really show men the value of coming in and how that can help them. We're also trying to make sure that all students feel supported on this campus, that we build resiliency in the idea of persisting through challenges to get to graduation. So we want to make sure that men and women alike feel supported in that, that we're building those things. You know, we want to ensure that men can see themselves on this campus as well as females.
Thanks for joining us, Dr. Teresa McGregor. She's Vice President of Enrollment Management at Jacksonville University.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, the St. John's River Water Management District is conducting a survey right now to see if citizens want to restore the Ocklawaha River or instead keep and repair the Rodman Dam. Now, the St. John's River Keeper is advocating for restoring the Ocklawaha, and they're urging people who feel the same way to complete this survey between now and Friday. Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann jumps on the line now to tell us why. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. So the public is actually being asked what they want to have happen to this Rodman Dam. It's south of us a little bit, still in our listening area. It's over 50 years old, needs repairs. In fact, hundreds of homes could be flooded if the dam were to fail. Can you tell us what's at issue here?
Most definitely. You know, it's very rare that you have an opportunity to right a 50-year-old wrong and actually have significant environmental economic benefit just by returning a river back to a free-flowing river like nature intended.
And so that's what you're advocating for. You would like to see, what would you like to see happen?
Most definitely. We are working with more than 60 organizations across the state to reunite Silver Springs, the Ocklawaha, and the St. Johns River by breaching the Rodman Dam and just returning the river back to a free-flowing one as nature intended. And that, in turn, will not only improve the health of Silver Springs and the Ocklawaha, but it'll also fortify the 100-mile St. Johns River estuary and make our river more resilient.
Can you explain, for those that aren't familiar, why the Rodman Dam was constructed to begin with some 50 years ago?
Yes, it was built as part of the failed Cross Florida Barge Canal in 1968. Fortunately, the canal was stopped by environmentalists and state leaders and President Nixon back in 72. But unfortunately, the dam was already in place, and it's remained in place for more than 50 years. And every day that dam is in place, it causes harm to Silver Springs, the Ocklawaha, and the St. Johns. And it also has to be drained regularly like a fishbowl to maintain it, and that causes additional harm. So by breaching it at this point in time, not only does it restore all of these wonderful water resources and ecosystems, it also protects downstream homes from an uncontrolled discharge if there was, you know, a tropical storm that came in and breached the dam uncontrollably.
Now, what's the argument for keeping the dam? The argument is mainly in favor of fishing, isn't that right? Fishermen like the area?
Yes, and you know, if you grew up fishing on that dam, on the pool that's behind it, I can see the attachment. And if this was a naturally functioning lake, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But you know, they have to artificially maintain it. It costs taxpayers millions of dollars, and it causes harm for all the waterways. And so by actually looking at restoring the natural flow, it increases the biodiversity and numbers of different types of fish for other types of fishing opportunities, as well as bass fishing. But it also restores more than 150 million gallons of fresh water to the St. Johns River system, nearly 18,000 acres of forested floodplain that provides so many water quality benefits, and will help offset increasing saltwater intrusion that's damaging our estuary.
The St. Johns River Water Management District wants feedback from the public about this, which is virtually unprecedented, isn't it?
It is. It's the first time in 20 years that there's been a public discussion. The actual position of the state has been to restore the Ocklawaha, and we believe that the fact that the St. Johns River is experiencing not only saltwater intrusion, but disappearing submerged grasses and wetlands, as well as significant public interest in this, and the fact that the dam is more than 50 years old, all of those factors has led to this public comment period, which ends this Friday. So we're asking everyone to go to stjohnsriverkeeper.org for more information, to log in and help us make history by, you know, correcting this 50-year wrong and get a free-flowing Ocklawaha hopefully this next year during the legislative session.
So you're asking the public to go to your website and fill out the survey, because the deadline is Friday afternoon, correct?
That's correct. If you can, you need to fill it out by 5 o'clock this Friday. Once all the surveys are in, the Water Management District will be putting a report together that will go to the governor and the legislature.
Okay. And should the overwhelming sentiment be in favor of restoration of the Ocklawaha, what could the legislature do next year to change the situation on the ground? What would happen? Would they vote legislation in to just get rid of the dam? Is that what you're hoping happens?
The actual plan that's been on the books for 20 years is actually to breach the dam at the historic river channel. And so what we'll be asking the legislature to do following the survey is to actually have legislation moving forward that would have adequate funding for restoration, but also recreation, providing more recreational opportunities like boat ramps and fishing docks along the free-flowing Ocklawaha and the St. Johns River to really take advantage of those increased fishing habitats.
And, of course, this is of interest to not only our area, North Florida, but also Central Florida. This affects a pretty big swath of the state, doesn't it?
It actually does. It actually is a project of not only regional impact, but statewide impact. And so the 60 organizations we're working with are from across the state. We're working with 13 different counties that will have direct benefits from this restoration and making sure that, you know, this is not only do we reap all the benefits collectively of this, you know, large-scale restoration project, but also working together to connect ourselves to make the most of enjoying these natural systems.
And we're getting past this summer green monster, the algae blooms that we typically see in the St. Johns River. That's something that we've had you on many times to discuss. This is a bigger picture discussion because, of course, for those who aren't familiar, Lisa, you advocate for the health of the St. Johns River in your capacity as the river keeper. This is a portfolio that includes a lot of efforts, the Ocklawaha River and the dam being just one of them. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Most definitely. You know, it's our responsibility, St. John's Riverkeeper, as well as us as citizens throughout its watershed, to really stand up for the St. John's with restoring the river's natural ability to filter out pollution and provide us healthy waterways like with this restoration, but also to stop pollution at its source, working for better policies in Tallahassee, like prohibiting the land disposal of sewage sludge, which is a new source of pollution, making sure our farming friends and agriculture has ways to reduce their fertilizer, working on policies, but also educating the public on how we can all be more river friendly to reduce our nutrient pollution footprints, like using little to no fertilizer, so we don't see the toxic blue-green algae like we saw this past summer.
You can learn more about all of these issues at stjohnsriverkeeper.org. And as Lisa Reinemann is telling us as Riverkeeper, you have until 5 o'clock this Friday to fill out a survey, let the state know what you think should be done with the Rodman Dam, whether it should be breached, and that would restore the Ocklawaha River. It would also have a big effect on the St. Johns River Basin and the water right here in Jacksonville. Much more information at stjohnsriverkeeper.org. Check it out. Make your voice heard. You have until Friday night. Lisa, always good to get you on the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
She is Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann. And in a moment, how a local firefighter is making it onto a national calendar, part of the fight for air climb, and some other good news and notes for your week in our What's Good Wednesdays. That's after this.
The Jacksonville Symphony's spectacular fall season continues with performances of Bach's lively Brandenburg Concerto No. 1, performed for you in Jacoby Symphony Hall, October 22nd and 23rd. Treat yourself to a sensational evening of live classical music, a night out to be shared with family and friends. Tickets and information at jacksymphony.org.
Hi, I'm Brendan Rivers, lead reporter for ADAPT, WJCT's website and newsletter on climate change. This year's State of the River report says we should be worried about the health of the St. Johns. Hear local officials react to this year's findings and talk about what they think should be done to protect the St. Johns River. Join us for a virtual panel discussion on Wednesday, October 20th. Register now at wjct.org/events.
I'm Tanya Mosley. You may know Yosemite National Park for its striking granite cliffs and ancient sequoia trees. But for many years, nestled within that stunning scenery was the hidden history of the hundreds of Chinese immigrants who helped develop the park. A new exhibit acknowledges that history. Next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman have been the most public faces of the college admission scandal. Off to the side, there's John Vandemore, Stanford's sailing coach. He was the first person to be charged, and he pleaded guilty. But he says he was the fall guy in a university rat race for standing and serious money. He'll explain why next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the American Lung Association has launched its 2022 Fight for Air Climb firefighter calendar to honor local heroes and support its vision of a world free of lung disease. Now, their second annual calendar features a local firefighter, Jeremy LaTraverse, from Kingsland Fire Rescue in Kingsland, Georgia. Now, every year, thousands of firefighters race up hundreds of stairs in full gear, weighing over 40 pounds, during Fight for Air Climbs across the country. Jeremy was chosen as one of the American Lung Association's top Fight for Air Climb supporters nationwide. He's raised more than $17,000 for the Lung Association. And Jeremy says he's pretty stoked to appear in this year's national calendar and promote the Fight for Air Climb. And he told me about it.
I was approached for this year's climb to represent the local area here, to represent the firefighters locally. Still a taken back. It's very, very humbling.
Now tell us about the Fight for Air Climb and why it's so important.
So the Fight for Air Climb locally and nationwide is every year we get together, we train usually 4 to 6 months on our own or pre-COVID, you know, at training spots. And we get together not only first responders of all types, nurses, firefighters, police, et cetera, local people, just like yourself or others that don't wish to climb in gear can also participate. And overall, it's to help raise awareness for lung diseases, lung issues, anything related to lungs. We have a saying, you know, if you can't breathe, nothing else matters. And that really hits home to me personally. My mom has been smoke-free for over 10 years now and really has improved her quality of life. And then I lost my grandfather-in-law some years ago to lung cancer. And then, you know, in our industry, overall, as being firefighters, of course, we're around smoke a lot and dangerous chemicals and things of that nature. You know, so that really, lung disease in our industry is big as well.
So how can people get their hands on this calendar in the meantime?
There is a link. They can go online to the American Lung Association. It's lung.org/calendar. And they can find that calendar. And it's, again, very humbling. I was not told yet what month I will be in, but to be amongst an incredible company with other firefighters that raise money just as well across the nation. I've had the calendar in the years past, and to now be in it is pretty cool.
Congrats, Jeremy LaTraverse from Kingsland Fire Rescue in Kingsland, Georgia. And here's some more good news for your midweek. This Saturday, the 2021 Jax Yoga Fest invites you to come on over to the Riverside Arts Market to soak in some awesome vibes with yoga classes inspired by celebration, collaboration, and connection. This area's thriving yoga communities will unite to offer a variety of class styles for beginners and seasoned practitioners. The Yoga Fun starts at 8 a.m. and runs through 3 p.m. under the Fuller Warren Bridge. All classes are free and feature nonprofits like Yoga for Change and Jax Yoga for Justice and Inclusion. Namaste, everyone. Well, Feeding Northeast Florida's Empty Bowls event comes back to town next Wednesday, October 27th. This is going to be at the Hyatt Regency Jacksonville Riverfront. The luncheon raises funds and awareness for food insecurity. The food bank in our area, Feeding Northeast Florida's food bank, serves families in 8 counties. Thousands and thousands of them facing food insecurity. Social distancing and COVID protocols will be in place. Get your tickets at feedingnefl.org. Quigley House educates, empowers, and equips survivors of domestic violence. And to raise funds for their on-site pet facilities, they're hosting Howloween Paws for a Cause this month. It's a dog-friendly event with a fall festival, parade, and costume contest. Quigley House says they're grateful to provide a safe place to shelter pets while their owners flee domestic violence. Costume contest and vendor registration is open now. Go to QuigleyHouse.org. The Donna Foundation is honoring Breast Cancer Awareness Month with a free event at their warehouse this Saturday. It's a 3-mile training run, a warehouse sale with deeply discounted merch, and an opportunity for runners and the public to donate blood through Life South. Check all of that out at thedonnafoundation.org. And WJCT Public Media has some good news. We've received a $500,000 grant from the Arthur Vining Davis Foundation to strengthen our local journalism initiative. We also thank Florida Blue, Vistar Credit Union, and the Community Foundation, who've made donations, totaling up more than $1 million so far. What we're doing is expanding our local reporting capabilities and our online publication. It begins with a new newsletter, Jacksonville Today. It launched this week. Now, Jacksonville Today builds on our other vertical digital publications like Adapt Florida, where we cover climate change and sea level rise, and our partners over at the Jackson Mag. They focus on the urban fabric of the region. We'll also spotlight our content sharing partners through Jacksonville Today, like the Times Union, News for Jax Channel 4, and the Jacksonville Daily Record. In the spring, we're going to launch Jacksonville Today as a full-blown digital newspaper. But in the meantime, you can be part of this. Get in on the ground floor. Learn all about the Jacksonville Today effort and subscribe to our daily newsletter. Just go to jackstoday.org and subscribe. It's free and it comes into your inbox every day. And if you've got some good news for us to add to our weekly menu, drop us a line. And thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the show. Our senior producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is our director, along with associate producer Catherine Hobbs, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and news editor Randy Roguski. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. In the meantime, have a great day and stay safe.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.